The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting here at KPCG and KPCG.fm, the live stream that you can get at that website and also at the Trumpet.com website. We had a fun day yesterday outdoors at the soccer field, the Joseph's Cup. I guess this was the ninth or the tenth annual game between the Ephraimites and the Manassites. Both Ephraim teams, women and men, won by one goal, so two close games yesterday afternoon. Another big winner, as my wife pointed out, was the strong southern wind. Definitely a factor, she said, and I'm not, I didn't see every single goal, but she said every goal was scored on the north end, so wind assisted. So great job to all four teams on a fun day out at the soccer field. Coming up on today's program, we've got more on the youth climate change protesting that's going on around the world. There were quite a few youths that gathered at the Capitol over the weekend, and so we've got a few sound bites from them and also a pretty hard-hitting commentary in response to this, worldwide uprising. We're seeing more and more of these youth protests all over the place. There's also a pretty good piece that we'll refer to later about Iran and how that they keep pushing and there's little or no response, whether they're taking out oil tankers or whatever it is. The more recent one, of course, in Saudi Arabia, the strike a little over a week ago. So we'll look more at that in just a bit as well. But to begin with, we begin the week yet again with yet another bombshell. So many bombshells. One bombshell after another, as CNN was reporting yesterday. Here, the administration now is enmeshed in another scandal, the way that CNN sees it, causing an uproar. This is from MSN this morning. It said, the scrutiny surrounding the phone call. Of course, this is speaking of President Trump's phone call to the new Ukrainian president back in July, where he evidently pressured or asked the Ukrainian president to investigate Joe Biden and his son Hunter. But this MSN report says the scrutiny surrounding the phone call has brought fresh peril to Trump's presidency and could turbocharge the drive by some House Democrats to open impeachment proceedings. So once again, you have Democrats and their allies in the media out there making wild claims based upon second and third hand knowledge. That's what this amounts to. We'll get more to that in just a second. I noticed, by the way, just before coming up here, Byron York had a tweet. He said, no one has seen the Trump-Zelensky transcript. No one has seen the whistleblower complaint. No one knows what was said, yet Politico writes, at this point, the facts are pretty much in the open and agreed to. We pretty much know all the facts, says Politico. And we don't know what was said. We don't have the transcript. No one's seen the whistleblower complaint. We learned over the weekend that the whistleblower didn't even hear it. He just saw some notes regarding the conversation. And as I said on Friday, there's tens of thousands of workers employed. There's tens of thousands of people employed by the DOJ and the FBI. And here is one whistleblower, one individual who read some notes or maybe who saw the transcript, and he is sounding the alarm. It's like Andy McCarthy says, this is how it always happens. Anonymous leaks. Anonymous leaks attributed to former intelligence officials. McCarthy says, while the media purport to be deeply concerned about Trump administration lawbreaking in classified matters, there is negligible interest in whether the intelligence officials leaking to them are flouting the law. Not concerned about that at all. Not concerned about illegal leaks. No, the only concern is what Donald Trump said or didn't say on a private phone call with the president of Ukraine, as if it's a crime for the president to ask a foreign leader to investigate a crime. This is a president, as National Review brings out, that thinks everything ought to be investigated. He's going on. He tweets about it. I think he tweeted that Barack Obama should be investigated because of his deal with Netflix. This is just the way he thinks. He thinks his opponents should be investigated. He's being investigated nonstop. So yet another bombshell invented to destroy Donald Trump. And already, I mean, if you look at some of the news from the weekend, already this appears to be backfiring. The Trump reelection campaign tweeted out this montage on Saturday morning, and this is regarding the Biden activities in Ukraine. Hunter Biden working for this Ukrainian gas company, I think it was, making millions of dollars, even while his father was serving as vice president. And as you hear at the end of this montage, threatening Ukraine, saying that if you don't fire this prosecutor who happened to be investigating Hunter Biden's company, and Joe Biden, who was vice president at the time, said, if you don't fire that prosecutor, well, we're going to withhold aid from you. You won't get that billion-dollar loan. Listen to this this montage that the president tweeted out, clip 13.
Wait a second. Not one single credible outlet has given any credibility to his assertion. Not one single one.
Now to our ABC News investigation this morning into Joe Biden's son, Hunter, and questions about money he made from foreign business dealings while his father was vice president.
You have a big story tonight on the New York Times website. Tomorrow, page one of the print edition.
Was Hunter Biden profiting off his dad's work as vice president, and did Joe Biden allow it? We're talking about millions of dollars in at least two countries.
We have Joe Biden as vice president having intervened to sort of force the firing of a Ukrainian prosecutor who happened to have an open case looking into a company, a Ukrainian gas company, that was employing Joe Biden's son.
There's no reason to pay Hunter Biden $50,000 a month.
Hunter Biden worked for a natural gas company in Ukraine, which is totally fair game. Did the vice president's son use his dad's influence to make money somewhere in the world? That's totally fair game.
Potential conflict of interest there that I think Joe Biden will have to answer for.
Hunter Biden's work with the company reportedly sparked concern among State Department officials.
But was it right for Hunter Biden to take a job like that in Ukraine while his father was engaged in diplomacy there?
There is a story here. We've told some of it. There's more to be told.
I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. If the prosecutor's not fired, if the prosecutor's not fired, if the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money.
Just a devastating montage there. The message is getting out. I think it's pretty clear that President Trump and his attorney, Rudy Giuliani, one of them anyway, that they were not happy with the fact that this was being covered up. And so here they are exposing more corruption, or at least saying there ought to be an investigation. And there should be. There should be. Just that last statement alone. You talk about a quid pro quo. They've searched and searched and searched, evidently, to try to find this in the conversations that the president had with the prime minister of Ukraine, or the president, I'm not sure what he's referred to as. They can't find it. But you just heard Biden himself bragging That was in an interview last January of 2018, bragging about what he said to the president of Ukraine back in 2016 when he was still in office, when Barack Obama was still in office. So they have the big whistleblower revelation. The Wall Street Journal, Friday afternoon, the president supposedly pressuring the president of Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden and his son. And here are the liberals, the radical left-wing media. They are furious. They just can't believe that President Trump would suggest that one of his opponents should be investigated, given what they've done for the past 3 years. It's laughable, I know. But listen to how Jake Tapper at CNN, how he approaches the story yesterday with President Trump's Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin. This is clip one.
So I do want to start with the president's interaction with the Ukrainian President Zelensky. Were you aware that the president had pressed Zelensky to investigate the Bidens?
I was not on that call, so I'm not aware. But I've been on plenty of other calls with the president. There's other people who listen to these calls, so I don't expect there were any issues whatsoever.
Is it common for the president, you say you've been on other calls with him, to press foreign leaders to investigate his political rivals here in the United States? Is that something you've heard before?
I haven't heard that, and I think you're speculating on what the president said. I would say these are confidential discussions between two foreign leaders. But I think the bigger issue is Biden came out this weekend saying he'd never had any discussions with his son. His son came out and said he had had business discussions with his father. So I really think that the real issue here is not what the president said, but what indeed did Biden's son do.
And so you have the tug of war going back and forth. The media and the Democrats, of course, want to insinuate all these things about the conversation that the president had with the new Ukrainian president. And then you have Donald Trump and his spokespeople out there saying the focus here should be on the Biden family. You know, yesterday, well, over the weekend, Jake Tapper works for CNN. CNN reported yesterday that the whistleblower, the one that got so much attention Friday after the Wall Street Journal story broke, CNN said over the weekend that the whistleblower didn't have direct knowledge of the communications. The whistleblower, the one coming forward, didn't even have direct knowledge. And yet, as Politico writes this morning, at this point, the facts are pretty much in the open and agreed to. We pretty much know everything. We pretty much know the whole story. Never mind that President Trump says, look, nothing inappropriate happened. Never mind that the Ukrainian government says nothing inappropriate happened. They pretty much have all the facts. The story's, we know everything about the story, and it's obviously an impeachable offense. CNN says, instead, the whistleblower's concerns came in part from learning information that was not obtained during the course of their work, and those details have played a role in the administration's determination that the complaint didn't fit the reporting requirements under the intelligence whistleblower law, the official said. So this could have been anyone at the NSA, the DOJ, the FBI. It says here that it didn't even pertain to the course of their work. Just kind of stumbled upon it. And now it's being reported all over the United States. Well, at least it will be for the next few days. But what will be the next bombshell by the end of this week? Here's how President Trump responded to this this Trump derangement syndrome over the weekend. He's talking about the conversation here and as far as whether or not the transcript will ever be released. This is clip 10.
Now, as far as my conversation, it was perfect. It was a perfect conversation. It couldn't have been any better. But we'll make a determination about how to release it, releasing it, saying what we said. It was an absolutely perfect conversation. The problem is, when you're speaking to foreign leaders, you don't want foreign leaders to feel that they shouldn't be speaking openly and good. You have to be talking to people. And the same thing for an American president. You want them to be able to express themselves without knowing that not every single word is going to be going out and going out all over the world.
That's the president yesterday saying that, look, if this is what we have to do now, well, I can't have a conversation with anyone. He went on to say, I didn't play the rest of the clip there, but he went on to say that, look, I know every time I pick up the phone and call a world leader, I know there's lots of people listening in. I allow that. He's got intelligence officials listening in. But if you start making it known to the whole world, if you start making it public, everything that I say to a world leader or everything that a world leader says to me, well, they're not going to be open with me. He brings up a good point. What a precedent this would be. It's already happened. Leaks early on in his administration, even before he was president, when they were in the transition period, as president-elect. There were leakers out there trying to destroy this president. And it's like Andy McCarthy says. Everyone's up in arms over what the president might have said, and we don't even know. But not one tiny, tiny, tiny little concern over the leaking. Going back to this exchange that Mr. Tapper had with the Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, this is what he said, clip two.
Is it the position of the administration that it is acceptable for politicians to pressure foreign leaders to look into and investigate their political rivals? Because that is what is being said, being reported, happened on this phone call, and it alarms a lot of people.
It alarms a lot of people in the Democrat Party and, of course, in the media. He went on to say, clip three.
If, for instance, President Obama had pressured a foreign leader, Putin or the president of Ukraine, anyone, said, I want you to look into Donald Trump Jr., or I want you to look into Eric Trump, international businessmen, both of them, would you not find that inappropriate?
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? He brings up President Obama and says, wouldn't you find it inappropriate if the Obama administration worked with foreign leaders or other nations to investigate a political opponent or the children of a political opponent? And you look at this vast international network that was actively working to bring down the Trump administration before he even came into office in January of 2017. The intel community in the U.S. working together with Christopher Steele, a British spy, and Steele working on the infamous dossier using Russian sources. And all these British intel agencies, they run with the story. John Brennan uses it, shares it with U.S. politicians like Harry Reid, works together with the news media to try to get traction for this story. Stephen Halper, remember, he was the American living in Britain. The FBI used him as an informant to infiltrate the Trump campaign. These are all things that happened. These were not actions that were just discussed on the phone as you should do this or maybe this should be done. This happened. This actually happened. Joseph Mifsud, he's the Maltese professor who was living in Italy. He's the one that supposedly told George Papadopoulos about the Clinton emails that Russia had. He lied to the FBI, by the way, but was never prosecuted. And then he's just disappeared. Malta, Italy, Russia, Britain? What a network. Alexander Downer, he came from Australia. an Australian diplomat. He's the one who claimed that he overheard Papadopoulos talking about the Clinton emails. And then Australia, the government in Australia, they gave Downer clearance to go ahead and pass this information on to the FBI. And, of course, it was that meeting that was used as a pretext for opening the Trump-Russia investigation. The Obama-Hillary Clinton people investigating a political opponent. And as we now know, there was nothing there. Well, you could also add Ukraine to the story. They were investigating Paul Manafort, who worked for President Trump for a short time. And then there's all the connections with that crazy Papadopoulos visit to Israel. Well, he was in Greece at the time, I think, when a man in Israel or from Israel invited him to Israel to work on a political project. He was given this stash of cash. Someone just handed him $10,000 in Israel. And Papadopoulos had enough sense to offload it in Greece. I think he turned it over to or gave it to a lawyer. I forget all the details of it, but he did that before he then came to the United States. And the moment that he landed at Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C., he was detained by the FBI. Something that looks very much like a setup. But look at all these nations and these mystery men, these individuals, the informants. There was the woman that the FBI sent over to Britain to try to seduce Papadopoulos. And all these different nations involved, actions that actually happened. In that article on Friday, the Wall Street Journal, it says, Mr. Giuliani in June and August met with top Ukrainian officials about the prospect of an investigation. The Trump lawyer has suggested Mr. Biden as vice president worked to shield from investigation a Ukrainian gas company with ties to his son, Hunter. Now that you go back to that, and it was in that montage I played at the start, but you go back to that interview that Joe Biden gave last January 2018, and there he was on stage. He was bragging. He was bragging about applying pressure or threatening Ukraine. There's no other way you can take it, really. This is clip number 9.
We're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said, I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
He got fired, I believe, within an hour of that exchange that Mr. Biden had with the then president of Ukraine at that time. And then they put someone in place that was solid, according to Joe Biden. But what we've since learned, I think it was April of this year, John Solomon broke the story that the prosecutor that Biden insisted be fired was investigating the company that his son worked for. His son had made millions of dollars from this company. Listen to this from the Wall Street Journal. It says, after the July call between the two presidents, the Ukrainian government said Mr. Trump had congratulated the new president on his election and expressed hope that his government would push ahead with the with investigations and corruption probes that had stymied relations between the two countries. The White House declined to comment. The Biden campaign, now you just heard what Biden said in 2018. The Biden campaign didn't respond to requests for a comment. Last week, a Biden campaign spokesman said that Mr. Giuliani's efforts to pressure Ukraine, he said, this is beneath us as Americans. So that's the Biden campaign's response. If you pressure them in any way to investigate, well, that's beneath us. as Americans? Well, as I said at the start, this latest bombshell, it looks as though it's already beginning to backfire. This is what Republican Congressman Devin Nunes said over the weekend. I think this was on Fox News, clip four.
These stories first originated back when Hillary Clinton was trying to make sure that Biden didn't get in the race. So now that these have been resurrected, I don't know who came up with the scheme. Maybe there really is this whistleblower is not a partisan. I mean, we want to hear from that whistleblower, but it sure looks like the scheme has backfired. And this, like I said, I think this is probably the end of Biden's campaign.
End of his campaign.
I really do. I don't.
There's a congressman who feels like this could be the end of the Biden campaign because it's drawing so much attention to something that the media only briefly covered, and then they hurried on from it. When we come back, we'll talk a bit more about some of the activities of the president over the weekend as he met with the Australian president. He met with the Indian premier. So some pretty active, an active schedule for the president over the weekend. Lots of crowds turning out, or a lot of people turning out for his speeches, and as I say, some meetings with world leaders these past few days. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
The Trumpet Daily.
Rasmussen had a daily presidential tracking poll just the other day. It says here I think this is from Friday. It shows that 52% of likely U.S. voters approve of President Trump's job performance. 52% now. And 47% disapprove. The latest figures include 37% who strongly approve of the job that Donald Trump is doing. I wish I could have gotten some figures yesterday. I'm not sure what arena he was in down in Houston, but he was there with the Indian Prime Minister Modi, and the arena once again, it was packed full, and you had all these Americans, Indian Americans, quite a few of them were there to come out and see the Prime Minister of India. So a mixed crowd, or a lot of different ethnicities there in this this huge arena listening to President Trump. And you see how they responded to what he said here when he talked about protecting Americans from the threat of radical Islam. Here's clip five.
Today we honor all of the brave American and Indian military service members who work together to safeguard our freedom. We stand proudly in defense of liberty, and we are committed to protecting innocent civilians from the threat of radical Islamic terrorism.
Lengthy applause there coming from this packed arena, including the Prime Minister from India as well. There were quite a few senators that were there, also Texas state representatives also. And then following that campaign stop in Houston, the president then flew to Ohio for his a second rally. And this time it was with the Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. I believe he was in the White House on, you Australians listening would probably know more, as it's, I'm sure, gotten more coverage down there than here. But he had some meetings with the Australian Prime Minister Friday, and then they met together in this town in Ohio to basically announce this new Australian company that was setting up shop there in this Ohio town, and that would make more jobs available for Ohioans. Well, the funny part here is that the town, it's called Wapakoneta, Ohio. So here's the Australian Prime Minister having some fun with this particular name. Clip 6.
Now, it's great to be here in Wapakoneta. Is that right? Is that close? Wapakoneta. Now, you think I'd do a little bit better than that. Now, I understand from meeting the Aussies who are already here down the front here, Andrew, Brian, Alan, Edward, and Martin, they're all here. And they told me this is called Wapak. Is that right? There you go. Wapak. But you'd think I'd get it a bit better because we've got Wagga Wagga, Wollongong, Wallarang, Wangaratta, Warrnambool, Woolloomooloo. So, you know, Wapak, that fits right in. This is a bit of Australia right here in Ohio, I reckon. There's a bit of Australia here.
So that's President Trump with the Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison at Wapakoneta, Ohio. More seriously, he, as I said, they were there to introduce this new company, this Australian company that's established a presence in Ohio. And both the Australian Prime Minister and the President were talking about the importance of jobs when it comes to the economy. Here's clip 7.
Jobs is what creates those choices and opportunities. So what we're celebrating here is jobs. Now, there's a very famous American that's come out of this wonderful town. You all know who it is, Neil Armstrong. A great American. And unemployment in the United States has not been as low as it is since Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. That is an amazing achievement, Mr. President. The lowest unemployment rate we've seen in the United States for a very, very long time. And the reason it's happening is because people are investing. They're investing in policies that are reducing taxes like they are in my own country. They're investing in policies which is seeing their economies grow, and people can see things happening and they want to be part of what is happening.
That's some comments there from the Australian Prime Minister. All these attacks right here at home on President Trump. And it's just interesting to contrast that with here he is bouncing down to Houston with the Prime Minister of India, this huge gathering. And I'm not sure how many gathered there in Wapakoneta, Ohio, but you can hear the reception there. And he's received that way. The president is, it seems, everywhere that he goes. CNN had a report last week about the prospect of President Trump winning the state of Minnesota in 2020. Donald Trump, of course, he shocked the world in 2016 by winning the at least several of the states in the so-called Rust Belt. Some of these states that generally go to the liberals, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin. Well, he didn't quite break through in Minnesota in 2016. In fact, I don't think we've had a Republican presidential candidate win the state of Minnesota since Richard Nixon in 1972. So it's been almost 50 years. Even in 1984, when Ronald Reagan won the landslide, he was going against Walter Mondale, who came from Minnesota. So Mondale won the District of Columbia and Minnesota, and that was it. Reagan won every other state, 49 states. So it's been since 1972 that a Republican has won Minnesota. Now you go to 2016 and Donald Trump only lost the state of Minnesota by 44,000 votes. So it was pretty close in 2016. And if you go back to July of this year, this is from a CNN report. It said that, yes, Trump can win Minnesota in 2020. No, it won't be because of Ilhan Omar. She's the controversial congresswoman from Minnesota that more and more people are not taking a liking to, I guess, if you can put it nicely. But CNN said in July he could win, but it won't be because of her. But then comes this report from last week. This, too, is CNN, and this goes on for a couple of minutes. But it is interesting to just hear it in its entirety. This reporter that went up to Minnesota to kind of get a feel for the way voters were thinking up there, and he was in for a surprise. This is clip 8.
In rural northern Minnesota, things are changing. The temperature, the leaves, the politics.
Are we talking thousands of people sort of shifting and changing their politics?
Yes. Yeah.
We are.
Oh, yeah.
Once a Democratic stronghold, many of the voters we talk to here say more and more they align with the president.
Her two brothers were staunch union Democrats for years, and they're not anymore.
This is mining country. Not coal mining, but taconite, a mineral used in making steel. 40, 50 years ago, the Iron Range, as it's called, was booming, bringing big city prosperity to small towns like Evelyn.
Things were just going gangbusters, businesses all over. Then when it crashed, everybody was caught by surprise. It crashed hard.
The number of mining jobs in the region went from over 14,000 in the 80s to just about 4,500 today, leaving families and main streets to suffer. Robert Blisulovich has been the mayor of Eveleth for 18 years, on and off. He votes Democrat on state races, but he's got a Trump sticker on his desk, a Christmas card from the president on his bulletin board, and the deer on his office wall sports a MAGA hat.
The political support for the president, part of this is really just a matter of survival.
Economics. Yep. That's, he's our guy. He supports mining. He's our guy.
Our steel industry is vibrant again. It was dead.
Trump's tariffs on imported steel are popular. So is his easing of environmental regulations. They also like his crackdown on immigration. In a state that's 80% white, the influx of Somali refugees has been a contentious issue. Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar is a controversial figure here.
She offends a lot of people.
She's not popular here.
No, not at all.
Folks here say they didn't leave the Democratic Party. The party left them.
That's from CNN reporter Martin Savage just last week. And as I said, CNN had a written report back in July, so a couple of months ago, where they said that President Trump could win Minnesota, but it's not because of Ilhan Omar. But then you hear there in that report where Savage admitted, or at least the mayor of that small town, said, yes, she offends a lot of people. She's not popular here. Isn't that interesting? A little bit of truth coming from CNN. Once in a while, they get it right. Here are people, voters from Minnesota, saying Democrats at, in the, Democrats at that, saying Donald Trump, he's our guy. He supports mining. He's for the working person. More and more, right across this this so-called Rust Belt, you have the working person speaking up for President Trump. So this administration, they're making inroads into Minnesota. You heard, as I think we played last week, when the president was in New Mexico, he was there saying that we're going to win New Mexico. He didn't win that state in 2016. So they're looking for new territory to conquer. There was a story at Real Clear Politics as well about California and how that state's in the process of removing 5 million inactive voters on its rolls. And this is, Republicans have been calling for this for years, but it never gets done. It says here, though, that Los Angeles County has started the process of removing from its registration rolls an estimated 1.5 million inactive voters who have moved, died, or become ineligible to cast a ballot, an effort to comply with federal election law and a court settlement with Judicial Watch, a conservative watchdog. So the courts have finally forced California or Los Angeles County to act. Now, I don't think there's a Republican on earth today that can win the state of California, but in the midterm elections, there were quite a few congressional seats that went to Democrats right at the last, actually days after the election had concluded, because they had all these absentee ballots and lots of fishy things that were going on. And so some of that's getting cleaned up. You see the influence of the Jeroboam administration, the resurgence, exposing corruption, cleaning up some of the 5 million inactive voters on the rolls in California, the growing popularity of this administration in Minnesota, New Mexico, across the Rust Belt. You see the campaign stops in Ohio yesterday. And Houston, my father says in the Jeroboam booklet, the article first, and then it became a booklet, he talks about the one final pass that God is making during this Jeroboam end. It's something to keep in mind as we consider all that's happening in the United States, even in the world of politics. My father said, we have a limited time to get this work done. God is showing us that we're getting extremely close to the end. This could be our last elected president. Some sobering statements there, indeed. When we come back, we'll update you on the youth climate change protests and conclude today's show with a stinging commentary that comes from Australia in response to this global movement among the young people. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I think I have time to just get through a little bit of this Bloomberg piece on Iran before I conclude with the climate change story. But just to show, again, I concluded the last segment with quite a few of the positive numbers, at least with respect to popularity and such, regarding the current U.S. administration. But not everything is rosy for this administration. And again, you can see where this falls right in line with Bible prophecy. Bloomberg says that Trump needs to restore deterrence against Iran. It says if Tehran is allowed to believe it's winning against the U.S., it will grow more reckless. And of course, you think about Daniel 11 and verse 40 and the fact that we're going to keep seeing Iran push and push and push to the point where it's Europe finally that responds and that retaliates. And the U.S. is not even mentioned in that prophecy. Bloomberg says Iran is convinced that it's winning the confrontation with the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. This view will likely encourage Iran to launch more attacks against its neighbors. Look at what it's already doing in the Strait of Hormuz and then Saudi Arabia last weekend. And nothing happens in response. It's crucial, it says, that Washington and its partners correct this misapprehension and restore deterrence before mayhem ensues. President Trump, further on, it says, he insists that American restraint is a sign of strength that some people just don't understand. That's very similar to what the previous president would say. A sign of strength to not do anything. We don't want to go into any more conflicts. We're done with that. We don't want to spend any more money on overseas wars. But listen to this article from Bloomberg. It says Iran gambled that by creating a massive crisis, it could generate diplomatic momentum and coerce other countries, most notably European, Arab, and Asian states, to compel Washington to ease the pressure on Tehran, to ease up the pressure. That's what they're aiming for in Tehran. And certainly there's not a lot of pressure being applied now, militarily. Nothing really to speak of. There are the sanctions, of course. But if that eases up, that's not a good sign. It says, best of all, from Iran's point of view, Trump fired his national security advisor, John Bolton, viewed by Tehran as the very embodiment of a U.S. military threat. That takes us back to something we talked about a week or two ago. They're happy about that firing, for sure, in Tehran, as John Bolton would have taken a strong stance against the mullahs in Iran. So you go back to, again, the title of that article and just keep in mind Daniel 11 and verse 40, the prophecy in Daniel. President Trump needs to restore deterrence against Iran. Well, as I said at the top of the program, they had more protests at the Capitol. These were young people. I don't think the young Swedish girl was there, but you'll recall last week we talked about these teenagers that were there in front of a congressional hearing or at a congressional hearing lecturing these adults on climate change. And here they were over the weekend at the steps of the Capitol, all of these young people stepping forward to the microphone. Here's a little bit of a montage from that, clip 11.
My name is Rosie Clemens Cope. I'm 11 years old. We are here because our parents trashed the planet, and it's up to our generation to save it.
But my future is in jeopardy. All of our futures are in jeopardy.
Baby boomers, all these people call us Generation Z, the last letter of the alphabet, because we are going to be the last generation to survive.
We have only 11 years to rectify decades of damage that we have inflicted on our planet, and only 18 months until some damages are irreversible.
And I am only 16 years old. I am here to speak for the trees.
I'd like to acknowledge my privilege and my background.
I am here for the people who are suffering and dying because of our country's decision.
And we are not here to talk about our sacrifices and our doom and gloom and not existing. We are here to create.
We do not have time to be polite. This is a revolution.
We are creating this movement every day because every day of inaction drives more action from us.
That's a sampling from our young people. I think it was over the weekend, so at least they weren't skipping out of school. But a little bit unhinged in most cases there. Blaming the parents. Yet another sign of our upside-down world, Isaiah 3, as I went through with you last week. But here, our parents caused all of this, and we're here, the little 11-year-olds, the 12-year-olds, the 13-year-olds, we're here to fix this. We're here to make the problem go away, and the cameras are there, the news media, they're there, the politicians are there, as you heard last week. This commentary coming from Australia, I thought was pretty refreshing. You don't hear this often. I failed to get the name of the commentator, but this was on Sky News, the Australian version of Sky News, and I'll just he basically, I think, to just set it up, he got this commentary from someone else, and then he's, I think, for the most part, reading it. So there you go, the mystery commentary written by someone who was then quoted on the news in Australia. But we'll conclude today's program with this commentary from Down Under.
All the school kids going on strike for climate change. You're the first generation who've required air conditioning in every classroom. You want TV in every room, and your classes are all computerized. You spend all day and night on electronic devices. More than ever, you don't walk or ride bikes to school, but you arrive in caravans of private cars that choke suburban roads and worsen rush hour traffic. You're the biggest consumers of manufactured goods ever, and update perfectly good, expensive luxury items to stay trendy. Your entertainment comes from electric devices. Furthermore, the people driving your protests are the same people who insist on artificially inflating the population growth through immigration, which increases the need for energy, manufacturing and transport. The more people we have, the more forest and bushland we clear, the more of the environment that's destroyed. How about this? Tell your teachers to switch off the aircon. Walk or ride to school. Switch off your devices and read a book. Make a sandwich instead of buying manufactured fast food. No, none of this will happen. Because, the piece says, you're selfish, badly educated, virtue-signalling little inspired by the adults around you who crave a feeling of having a noble cause while they indulge themselves in Western luxury and unprecedented quality of life.